Blog Talk Radio.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. It's a new summer era. We don't wanna see the heroes. We fighting against each other. It's the love that we need with one another. You understand? Trust might be love. No.
Happy Sunday. Welcome to another Andy Morrell Dollhouse Radio production of Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And we have a few issues to go into tonight. I hope I can run them off the top of my head. One is going to be the Congressional Black Caucus. The other issue is going to be fathers. An issue. I'll get into that later. And then the next issue will be the word nigger and also the word Becky, if there's a similarity. I'll put it like that. Because right now I'm having difficulty with my laptop. I'm on a certain screen and it is frozen. And I was trying to get it correct as the music had went off, but I'm going back to that song. It was called Black Renaissance by Kimber. That's the opening song, and I'm still trying to unfreeze my screen, which is not happening. But anyway, moving right along. As we know, it is now the month of May, and also just saying concerning the month of May, Urban Society has been on Dollhouse Radio, Indie Morrell's Dollhouse Radio, for 2 years now. And in fact, May is the anniversary of the show Urban Society, being that the show started 2 years ago, 2013, in May, the month of May. So therefore, the show Urban Society is 2 years old. We've had a lot of, not really a lot, only, well, two changes in the show, but nevertheless, change is good sometimes. Change, as is said, the quote, so to speak, the only thing constant is change. And things change just like that. So Big shout out to Urban Society on India Morella's Dollhouse Radio. 2-year anniversary. Interesting. So, and also concerning the month of May, I was just thinking to myself about the month of May and the warm weather of the month of May. And as I've said before, as we were coming up out of the winter, I am glad winter was going. I'm glad winter is gone. Can't stand winter weather. It's just, it's cruel. It's painful. But anyway, the warm weather is finally here. And it is the month of May, and still, we're not even in June yet. June 21st is the first day of summer, and we're still in May. So God bless, we have a long way to go for warm weather. That's what I'm saying right now. And I hope June takes as long as it wants to in getting here, because the longer June takes in getting here, that much more will we have warm weather here. Yes. So let's move right along off the weather and on into the show. And I'm going to repeat again that my screen is still frozen, and we're going to have an issue, no doubt, with playing the music, being that my screen is still frozen. But I'm going to try something here. I'm going to try to power off my laptop and then come back and see what happens. That's what I'm going to do. But in the meantime, I'm going to go on with the show. And as we know, initially, I have a few miscellaneous articles that I want to read out before we get into the main topics. But also, before we even start there, I also want to say that last week I had left off on the issue of the LGBTQ community and corporate America. And I also want to start back up with that as the first topic to go right into that after we go into these miscellaneous articles, issues, which are just as relevant they are. They really are. Anyway, by being on the Internet, I had seen that a writer has passed. And actually, he was the writer who had written a book entitled The Spook Who Sat by the Door. And if we remember, those of us old enough to remember, they made a movie out of that very book. And unfortunately, I didn't watch that movie back at that time. And also just saying that was during the time when a lot of black movies were coming out. But however, they had a thing about that, and they called them blaxploitation movies, and that was something negative. And based upon all of the uproar that came out about those movies, they stopped making those movies. And then there was a lot of talk about that having been done, concerning by that having happened, that did in fact put a lot of up-and-coming black actors and actresses out of business, out of the movie industry. In other words, there was no more roles for them to fulfill or get into, because as we know, Hollywood was not actually putting blacks in films. That was back during that day, but that's another issue. But anyway, the movie The Spook Who Sat by the Door was one of those movies that came out during the era of what was called, quote, blaxploitation films, unquote. And like I said, I didn't see that movie. Primarily, I didn't watch it primarily because of the name, The Spook. I mean, I have a thing about, you know, words that denigrate black people, that denigrate African people of African origin. And spook, again, those of us old enough to know would know that that was another name that white folk like to call black people. Imagine a really, really weird, crazy, stupid name, a spook. The spooks, and real. But anyway, so based on that title, I didn't watch the movie back then. It was only about 3 years ago that I decided to watch that movie based upon a Facebook posting. I watched it, loved it, enjoyed it, actually did. The movie was great, but that's another issue. But we can go into that later. Okay, let's see what's happening here. What happens here? So this is what I have here about this person. What was his name? His name was Sam Greenlee. That's his name, Sam Greenlee. And it says here, I have some, like a bio or a, someone had written an article about that situation. And it says here that even into his so-called golden years, the writer Sam Greenlee was outspoken about the curious fate of his 1973 film, The Spook Who Sat by the Door. Greenlee, 83, died from natural causes early Monday morning at his home. And the article goes further to say that The Spook Who Sat by the Door was Greenlee's one feature film. He was writer and producer, adapted from his 1969 novel of the same name, which was an underground classic inspired in part by Greenlee's own experience as the rare black man working for the Foreign Service from the late 1950s through the mid-60s, stationed in Iraq, Pakistan, and Greece before returning to Chicago. Both the book and the film center on a black activist and intelligence man named Dan Freeman, played by an actor called Lawrence Cook, named Lawrence Cook, who quit the agency, moved back to Chicago, and kickstarts an armed revolution steeped in black nationalism and groovy dialogue, however they want to pronounce that. But before I go further, I'm going to try and log back in here to the Dollhouse site and see if I can bring back up the area where I should be. So just bear with me, okay? This is quite this is like a nuisance. It's strange. Oh man, with this, I've been having a lot of computer issues lately. Sorry about this, but things happen, and we have to try to resolve these issues. We have to try and move along anyway. Okay, let's see what happens here. Okay, I'm going back into the studio, and because we also have to play the music that we have to play. Okay, my laptop is engaging now. But anyway, going back to this guy, Sam Greenlee, as I was lastly saying there, it says that, you see, both the book and the film centered on a black activist and intelligence man named Dan Freeman, played by Lawrence Cook. Okay, let's see what happens here now. Okay, so I am back in the studio again. Let's see what's going to go on. Okay, and then while we play a song, I'm going to try to get this situation more straight. Okay, right now my music, my screen isn't moving at all. It's moving slowly. Okay. But anyway, so just still to talk while I'm trying to operate this situation here. Okay, I'm going to go on and just play a song. Let's see here. I was almost there. Christmas. Okay, so I'm going to go on and play a song that, let's see. No, I'm not going to play that song there. I'm going to try to go on down. This thing is moving very slowly. Okay. Because I don't want to just play a song and then the thing doesn't come on. And now I'm way past the area where I should be. I'm sorry, people. This is kind of embarrassing. It really is. But this is my laptop that I have here. Okay. I see a song here, and I'm just going to see what happens. It's called Drop It from Trevor Jackson. Let's see what happens. So this song is called Drop It from Trevor Jackson, and we'll be right back.
Drop it, drop it, drop it where you are. Drop it. Listen, I'm from the nap. She give me Cali love. When she fall in love, I can't second. She set the bar. She get A plus. When she do my dance, I can't wait. Wait. Drop it where you are. I can't wait for you to pop that girl. No.
Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones, and I'll just say that I hope I have this situation remedied. We'll see what happens. Anyway, we just heard the song from Trevor Jackson entitled Drop It, and I will tell you now that it wasn't a part of the playlist, but I had to play something, and I just did. So we're back, and let's see how we go with this, with the boards here, okay? So anyway, the article that I was just reading from is about Sam Greenlee. He's the author of the book entitled Spook Who Sat by the Door. And as I was lastly reading, it was talking about, well, the book itself and what the book had pertained to. I won't go back into that, but what I'll go to now is still in the article where it says, but something strange happened shortly after the film opened in theaters. It disappeared for reasons that remain unclear. The prince literally vanished. Greenlee himself believed movie theater owners were visited by members of the FBI and were pressured to pull the film from the screen, from their screens. It's not an implausible theory, considering the story's militant content, but one that has never been proven. And it did say that, but that didn't stop Greenlee from speaking out anyway. And the article goes further to say that charming and grace with a wily, indefatigable intellect, Greenlee sat for many interviews in his last years, including one for the documentary Infiltrating Hollywood. The Rise and Fall of the Spook Who Sat by the Door which chronicled the story of the film's making and subsequent disappearance. And also says here concerning Greenlee that numerous video interviews of Greenlee abound on YouTube, including one in which he is unsparing in his opinion of contemporary black cinema. They have it in quotes here where it says that Greenlee says, if we're going to be outsiders, let's take advantage of being outsiders, okay? If you want to be rich, if you want to be a rich hoe, then go to Hollywood. If you want to say something true about black people, then do what we did. Raise the money from the black community and shoot what you, that's what Greenlee said in an interview. And I have, how can I put it here? I have some words here from one of the players in the movie Spook Who Sat by the Door. And it comes from one of the a light-skinned person in the movie who could pass for white. And it's possible that he was white. He looked more than light-skinned. He did, in fact, look like he was white. But as we know, there are black people, there are people of black parentage who do have Caucasian features. And you wouldn't know that they were black unless they told you they were black. Then it's upon you to believe if they are or are not black. But anyway, the character in that movie, I guess, because someone was questioning his blackness and concerning if he was or wasn't passing. And in the movie, he states that, I am not passing. I am black. Do you hear me, man? Do you understand? I was born black. I live black. And I'm going to die probably because I'm black. Interesting words. Based upon the black urban experience, being black in America. And as we know, as he has said there, I'm going to die probably because I'm black. To those who kind of miss that, just think about Mike Brown. Think about Trayvon Martin. Think about Sandra Bland, who died primarily only because they were black. But I always like to rephrase that and say it's not because they were black per se, but it was because of the mindset of someone who, how can I put it, it was more so because of the mindset that someone had about their blackness that caused their death. Basically, that's the way I see that. We have to understand what we're talking about when we are talking. I mean, there are two ways to look at that. One way is improper, and another way is the proper way. Not because they were black per se, but more so because of the mindset of someone about their blackness is what had them killed, got them killed. Racism is the mindset of those who killed those individuals that I had just mentioned. But anyway, now that I, well, it's unfortunate that I'm thinking about this guy again, the Sam Greenlee guy, but it's interesting that the article that I just read, it does speak about him having a proliferation of YouTube videos on the internet. And as time passes, I, for one, will in fact look into what he had said in those videos. Definitely so, because like I said, I finally did look at the movie. Yes, I did. But I haven't read the book yet. That's something I have not done, but which I also now do plan to do. It's unfortunate that I'm thinking about this now after he has passed, but well, it's just good that I, per the internet and per Facebook, that I learned about the passing of this guy. And then now I have to pay homage. Yes, I do, because evidently he had much to say, and it's unfortunate that many of us didn't listen to what he had to say while he was here. And now that he's gone, I think, well, I know for myself, it behooves me to now check into him, as I said, to see what he was talking about. And I am, in fact, going to do that. First of all, I plan to, even after the show is over, go to YouTube and see what he was talking about there. And then as time goes along in the very near future, to look into the book itself, The Spook Who Sat by the Door. Indeed, yes, I will. Okay, moving right along, away from Sam Greenlee, let him rest in peace. He did his work well. I'll leave it like that. And another article that I wanted to, not necessarily an article, but just something that I had heard over the week, just recently, just last week. It was about a plane having had disappeared, an Egyptian plane that had disappeared. That's the way the news reports were first reported. And as we know, well, let me just read what I had written in response to having heard about that. What I had written was, it should be of interest how lately, when a plane malfunctions and crashes or is sabotaged, the media comes off reporting flight disappears, as if something miraculous and mysterious has taken place, other than the usual unfortunate occurrence of a plane having some kind of mishap. Whatever the mishap was initially, let me read that again. Whatever the mishap was isn't initially reported. Instead, what's reported is flight number whatever has disappeared, vanished. The flight disappeared or vanished, yes, but in what sense? The flight disappeared or vanished from the radar screen. Yes, disappeared, / vanished. Yet, that's not what we are told. Radar isn't even mentioned, but the flight disappearing or vanishing is. You know, I mean, I had just picked up on that because, as we know, lately, whenever a plane disappears off the radar screen, which is not what is mentioned, because, in fact, that is what has happened when a flight disappears. Per, let's say, someone looking at a radar screen, that's what they see. What do they call those people? Not flight technicians, but flight controllers. I guess the layman's term is the term that everybody understands. The flight controller sitting there, you know, charting the plot or charting the course of the flights that are in flight. And all of a sudden, I mean, one of those charts, the graph, the bar, the line, just disappears. And it's like that flight, whatever, has disappeared off the radar screen. But nothing miraculous or mysterious, actually. What happened is something happened to the plane. What's to be known now is what happened to the plane. But again, going back to what I was saying there, our media now reports just what the flight controller sees. He sees the flight disappears. And the media puts it out like flight whatever disappeared. Like that, what was it, that Malaysian, the first time when they used that phrase, Malaysian jet whatever disappeared. As if, you know, it's something mysterious. As if maybe something, you know, Twilight Zone-like took place. But then as the months went by, we began to hear about debris coming up, floating up from wherever, indicating that, well, there was a mishap with the plane. Nothing really super mysterious, but it went down because of something, a mechanical malfunction maybe, or maybe a bomb. We don't know. But what I'm saying is the initial, lately, they like to throw that up in our face that, you know, the flight disappeared. I mean, our media, what's happening with our media? I say our media, but what's happening with the media, with the nonsense that they're trying to put in our heads? And also what they are not telling us, but should be telling us. And consider the situation with the current political campaigns, political reporting. All they report about basically and mostly is that Donald Trump, that Donald MF and Trump. I mean, and it's not an accident, but that's another story. That's another story. I won't even go into that. But concerning that, so I'm going to leave that thing about flights disappearing, flights vanishing, when in fact, people, all that is happening is the flight does vanish off the radar screen. The flight that's in progress on its way to wherever, it does disappear off the radar screen. Nothing miraculous, because that's what happens. That is what happens. So, interesting. But, you know, but lately I, because of Donald Trump, the proliferation of Donald Trump being on our TV screens, yes, my TV screen, I really stopped watching it, really. And because they're not really showing Bernie Sanders as they should, and only talking about Hillary Clinton, and because Hillary Clinton basically won the New York primary here in New York where I am. I didn't vote for her, but she won. Something else that depressed me. So my TV, I haven't turned it on. If I turn it on, I turn it to the Weather Channel and just look at the weather and whatever. But that's what I do a lot lately because I'm so turned off from from established media. But anyway, again, moving right along, I have this other article, and it does, in a sense, pertain to Donald Trump, in a sense, but it more so pertains to some female who was working at some place, and she happened to have worn a hat that said, America isn't great. Or no, America was never great. That's what was written on her hat, and she has gotten a lot of flack from that, a lot of negative feedback about that hat that she ordered online. But anyway, this article here says that a Staten Island woman who supports Senator Bernie Sanders says she received death threats after photos of her wearing a cap with the message, America was never great, were posted widely on social media. The woman, Crystal Lake, 22 years old, said Thursday that she ordered the custom-made hat online with the phrase, a play on the slogan, Make America Great Again, popularized by the campaign of Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee. Ms. Lake said she had gotten tired of hearing Mr. Trump's slogan from his supporters and thought America, just a second, and thought America was never great. That's what she says. She said that Mr. Trump's slogan did not make room for bigger aspirations beyond the past and that he was dismissive of groups that did not fit his ideal demographic. Home Depot workers, America was never great, has sparked social media rage. Miss Lake, that is the woman who wore the hat, Miss Lake says the hat arrived on Saturday and she wore it the next day to work at the Forest Avenue, Staten Island, I guess, Home Depot. And that's where she got all the flack from. And she further says that she was surprised that a photo of her wearing the hat had been taken by a customer, but she did not specifically see anyone snap a picture and heard no complaints from customers, co-workers, or managers, describing Sunday as just a regular day. The sense of normalcy was shattered on Wednesday, however. At first, she said, she was unaware of how much attention she was getting. But in short order, Ms. Lake says she was bombarded with negative comments, including death threats on social media, just because of her hat. In fact, stipulating a truth also, because some could say that some believe that America was great, and in a sense is greater than a lot of other countries. That's for sure. But then again, that would then entail what does one mean in saying great? Great in what sense? I mean, I'd rather live in this country than in many other countries. That's for sure. But going back to the other phrase that Donald Trump is throwing out, make America great again, as if it's all of a sudden not great. I mean, that would be more so a false statement than not. That would be more so a false statement, certainly would. But people are crazy. I long ago realized that in a real sense. But so that's her situation, because she ordered that hat online and decided to wear it, just making her own statement. People fell out about it. Like, I guess thinking that she's anti-American. No, she's not anti-American. She's just representing truth as she know it, per her hat. Yes, she is. Okay, we got like another minute before we start our next music break. And then I have another article that I want to go into entitled a racially charged video, Royals Elite Private School in Los Angeles, California. A lot of us may have heard about that particular video about a bunch of students, high school students in some private school. Okay, I'm going to hold off on that thought and therefore this article, because we are going to go on into our music break that we have to go into, and I'm going to play the song from Lydia Caesar entitled Lifted. So this is Lydia Caesar, her song entitled Lifted, and we'll be right back.
Lydia Caesar. Every time you come around, I get so lifted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Got to admit, I'm addicted. Ooh, Cause you like a hit of the best lip. Boy, you got that ooh. When I need a fix, you pull out some tricks and I be like ooh. My man, he got the golden gloves, the Midas touch, loving like ooh. He know I can never get enough. My favorite drug, overdosing on you. Cause men, I want no ordinary love. Oh no, I went and found my diamond in the rough. Now he's mine. He ain't flawless and I love him either way. And I know to make him feel some type of way. Euphoria, I want more, yeah. Baby, take me
every
higher.
Every time you come around, I get so lifted, yeah.
Ooh, got to admit, I'm addicted, baby. Cause you like a hit of the best lift, boy, you got that. Oh, when I need a fix, you pull up some tricks, and I be like, I'm a junkie for a sweet lips, the way we kiss, body like ooh. Strung out on his fingertips, with every grip, I fall deeper into you. Cause men, I want no ordinary love, oh no. I went and found my diamond in the rough, now he's mine. He ain't flawless and I love him either way. And I know to make him feel some type of way.
Every time you come around, I get so lifted.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Welcome back to India Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard a song from Lydia Caesar entitled Lifted. That was Lydia Caesar, her song entitled Lifted. And I was going into the article now entitled Racially Charged Video, Royals Elite Private School in L.A., which means that royals, it means it upset them or really made them, it disturbed them, supposedly. Anyway, the article goes on to say that an elite Westside private school said Tuesday that it is investigating a video showing students singing the lyrics of a rap song containing profanity and offensive language about women and African Americans. The video emerged on YouTube this week as part of a campaign on charge.org, demanding that the Brentwood School deal with the video and what organizers said are other racial issues on campus. It's unclear when the video was recorded. In a statement, the school described the lyrics as offensive and inconsistent with our core values. We are investigating this insensitive behavior, will address the situation directly, and will respond seriously. The petition criticized the school for not doing more. Brentwood has done nothing other than offer to talk to them. If these kids weren't in their socioeconomic position of their racial heritage or considered assets to the community based on social status and or their parents' wealth, consequences would be different, the petition states. Brentwood claims to value diversity and acceptance, but their lack of action demonstrates otherwise. This is just another example of their white favoritism. I guess that's what the petition from change.org is stating. And it goes further to cite something by Demille Lee, whose son is in 12th grade at the school, and it says that she heard about the video for the first time on Monday night of last week when she got an email from the school administration. She hadn't yet talked to her son, but planned to do so. And it has her words in quote saying, I don't know why the kids got this idea. this kind of situation should never happen, especially in Southern California, where there are so many different populations. Brentwood is considered one of Los Angeles's most prestigious schools. In its statement, the school said it hoped to learn from the incident, you know, like one of those, as the phrase, after President Obama's election, after Senator Obama's election, a lot of things that happened after that became teachable moments. But now this statement says the school said it hopes to learn from the incident. Another way to say teachable moment. Anyway, it goes on to say that this situation, this is what the Brentwood School administrators are saying. Their words are in quote here. It says, this situation underscores the fact that nurturing a climate of mutual respect and inclusion at Brentwood is an ongoing process. We will use this as an opportunity to further authentic dialogue about diversity and what it means to each individual member of our school. End of quotes. But the authors of the petition said more needed to be done to make non-white students at the school feel more welcome. Unless they began implementing the values that they parade, it will be difficult for more students that identify as minority members to feel embraced as part of the community, they said. Yeah, that's something. I have seen the video that I guess has gone viral, as people like to say, and it shows a bunch of white kids, singing from some rap song, talking about I'll fuck your bitch, nigga. You know how rappers today put those kind of words in their songs, and it's played on radio. Terrible. But anyway, I had something to write about that. What I had written was, I said, sad. All the entertainers can say is they are just simply singing / repeating the words in a song. How ignorant some entertainers are. And I went on to say the dumbest was Richard Pryor. But alas, that's their hustle. In other words, that's their hustle. A hustle is only concerned about making money. Never does the thought of reading or buying a book enter their hustling heads. Entertainers, a lot of them, are like Hillary Clinton in terms of money. If it don't make dollars, it don't make sense. Hence, to such individuals, if it makes dollars, it makes sense. And then further, one of these people who think like that, some guy named Richard Homie Kwan, last name spelled Q-U-A-N, he says they asked him a question about what he felt about the video and the white kids mouthing the word nigger and bitches, or I'll fuck your bitch, nigger. He said, I feel good about it. That's what he said. He said he feels good about it. And then Ja Rule, haven't heard of him lately until now, but they found him from somewhere. And he says, Ja Rule says, to them it's a song. They just sing the song, having fun. What do you do? Not play the song when you have a white audience? And then he said, many rappers do not have a problem with it. And that's true, unfortunately. Many black people don't have a problem about that. You know, but I think what Ja Rule has said there concerning what do you do? Not play the song when you have a white audience? That's not really the answer. Because in a sense, what do they call that? Some say putting the cart before the horse. But I think in this case, it's putting the horse behind the cart. Because he says, what do you do? Not play the song when we have a white audience? What about not even using those words in front of a black audience? I guess he don't think like that, because he's perfectly comfortable with using that word, the word nigger, in his lyrics. As for myself, no, not comfortable at all with it. If I use the word, I'm more so, like I said before, trying to explain the reason for not using it. It's interesting, the differences that people have about that word, the different thoughts people have about that word. But I'm going to speak more about that in the show later on anyway, if I do in fact get to it. But anyway, so leave me that alone for now. I'm going to go back into the issue of the LGBT community and corporate America. As I was reading last week, I was mentioning about how even Michael Jordan and that basketball team that he hosts, along with other corporate entities, have come out in support of the bathroom legislation. How can I put it? They have come out against the bathroom legislation that certain areas there in the South are proposing or have proposed. And they're saying that if those laws aren't changed, then they're going to withdraw their economic support from those particular states. You know, interesting. But still, in my thinking, I do in fact feel, as I said last week, that here America is all up in arms, in a real sense, about the rights of a really small minority of people, a small minority of individuals, but who are heavily moneyed. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of money in this society, and therefore money has ability to influence things, people. And that's where we are right now with this situation, the LGBT community and their agenda. I'll put it like that. I will say that I do in fact feel that more discussion is needed on this issue about homosexual rights, and then the proliferation of a homosexual culture, if I can say it like that. Better said, the homosexual agenda. I think more is needed for more people to understand what is in fact going on, really, because through reading some things about the homosexual community, what I found interesting is that even within their community, they are somewhat at odds with each other, because based upon what I had read, at one time, let us say, gay people weren't so sure if they ought to consider the transgender people in their program in terms of pushing for homosexual equality. That even sounds strange to me, homosexual equality. I mean, there's a thing there that I'm coming to. But before I go there, I don't want to get sidetracked. What I was saying there is that even within the homosexual community, there is dissonance. There is disagreement. And there is disagreement, but for the moment, that disagreement has been submerged. And right now, they are more so than not portraying a monolithic front. But even within their own movement, they are going about, let's say, to bring the word back up, homosexual equality. They want equality in a real sense for each faction of homosexualism. They want equality. I mean, I guess we can say the lesbians want equality with the male homosexual. Well, the lesbian, the female homosexual, wants equality with the male homosexual. And by the same token, the transgender homosexual wants equality as well with the lesbian community, as well as the homosexual male community. There is dissension even in there. And in a real sense, it's almost as if they themselves, even in their grouping, aren't sure what is what and what isn't. I mean, because, I mean, the male homosexual is, the transgender person is not exactly considered a male or female homosexual. He or she is just considered transgender. But in essence, that person is a homosexual. Is he or is she not? But yet, you know, I mean, the situation is really convoluted. But what I'm saying here and saying what I said is that we have to come to understand more, not only about this movement, but about entities within the movement itself, because even they themselves aren't clear in what is or what isn't in terms of actually, well, I guess they know what they want. But then again, I mean, concerning identifying themselves within what they are in, that's something that's really convoluted. But at the same time, they are pushing, well, I guess I can say that correctly as I see it, this kind of lifestyle, if you will, this kind of culture is being pushed on the rest of us, the majority of us, as if it is in fact authentic. I guess it is in fact authentic to them. But then again, overall, is it actually authentically, authentic behavior? I guess, again, to them, it is, in fact, authentic behavior. But, see, that's going into that, and that's something, in my opinion, that we have to figure out. I mean, we have to give thought to this thing. I mean, really, I mean, I'm somewhat reading up on it now. And matter of fact, concerning reading up on it, I happen to have come across something per the Internet. It was something written, but some say it was a piece of satire that was written back in the, I guess we could say the late 70s by some guy named Michael Swift. It's called Michael Swift's Gay Manifesto, which was, well, no, in the, 1987, matter of fact. It says Michael Swift's Gay Manifesto was first published in February of 1987. But before I go there, I'm trying to keep my eye on the time because I have to play the music. that's for sure. So let me keep my eye on the clock. Okay. As I said, somebody named Michael Swift. And you see, the thing is, what I do is as I'm reading, trying to read up on this issue, names that come up, I try to read about those names, because no doubt these people are lights or leaders in the gay movement, in the homosexual movement, in their push for equality and all those things that pertain to equality. Okay, it says here that it was reprinted in the Congressional Record without the opening line, describing it as an eruption of inner rage on how the oppressed desperately dream of being the oppressor. And it says here further that the opening line is included below. The rest is public record. And let's see, it starts off here by saying this. It says, there's a difference between a homosexual and a homosexual movement. God loves all of us. We all have sinned, and while we were yet sinners, yet he loves us. It has been difficult for all Christians to stand up to this movement because no one wants to point out the sins of others. But while we are so carefully being quiet, outrageous teachings have been attempted in our public schools. Pastors have been threatened with lawsuits. Small businesses are being forced to participate in activities they would rather not cater because it's against our faith. Did anyone really want a pastor to be forced to marry them, or was/is there an agenda to be had? And it goes further to say, I guess that no doubt was from some minister, or part of the article that is written that I'm still reading from. But before I go further, we're going to go into our next music break, and we're going to hear a song now from Myla J, entitled "Diamonds," featuring Drake and Future, from the CoverGirl mixtape. So here we go.
Yeah.
Welcome back to India Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard a song from Myla J. entitled Diamonds featuring Drake and Future from the CoverGirl mixtape. And right now I'm on the issue of the LGBTQ community and corporate America. And I have this article here. It's called basically The Gay Manifesto. Some say it's satire that was written by this guy, Michael Swift. And it says here that this is an outre. I guess that's a French word meaning something concerning queer, outlandish. And it says here, like I said, this is an outre, madness, a tragic, cruel fantasy, an eruption of inner rage on how the oppressed desperately dream of being the oppressor. And it goes like so. We shall sodomize your sons emblems of your feeble masculinity, of your shallow dreams and vulgar lies. We shall seduce them in your schools, in your dormitories, in your gymnasiums, in your locker rooms, in your sports arenas, in your seminaries, in your youth groups, in your movie theaters, bathrooms, in your army bunkhouses, in your truck stops, in all your male clubs, in your houses of Congress, wherever men are with men together. Your sons shall become our minions and do our bidding. They will be recast in our image. They will come to crave and adore us. All homosexuals must stand together as brothers. We must unite artistically, philosophically, socially, politically, and financially. We will triumph only when we present a common face to the vicious heterosexual enemy. If you dare to cry faggot, fairy, queer at us, we will stab you in your cowardly hearts and defile your dead, puny bodies. We shall write poems of the love between men. We shall stage plays in which man openly caresses man. We shall make films about the love between heroic men, which will replace the cheap, superficial, sentimental, insipid, juvenile, heterosexual infatuations presently dominating your cinema screens. We shall sculpt statues of beautiful young men, of bold athletes, which will be placed in your parks, your squares, your plazas. The museums of the world will be filled only with paintings of graceful, naked lads. Our writers and artists will make love between men fashionable and de rigueur, and we will succeed because we are adept at setting styles. We will eliminate heterosexual liaisons through usage of the device of wit and ridicule, devices which we are skilled in employing. We will unmask the powerful homosexuals who masquerade as heterosexuals. You will be shocked and frightened when you find that your presidents and their sons, your industrialists and your senators, your mayors, your generals, your athletes, your film stars, your television personalities, your civic leaders, your priests, and not the safe, familiar, bourgeois, heterosexual figures you assume them to be. We are everywhere. We have infiltrated your ranks. Be careful when you speak of homosexuals because we are always among you. We may be sitting across the desk from you. We may be sleeping in the same bed with you. There will be no compromise. We are not middle-class weaklings, highly intelligent. We are the natural aristocrats of the human race. Let me read that part again. highly intelligent, we are the natural aristocrats of the human race. And steely-minded aristocrats never settle for less. Those who oppose us will be exiled. We shall rise vast private armies, as Mishma did, to defeat you. I got to look up who this Mishma was, to defeat you. We shall conquer the world because warriors inspired by and banded together by homosexual love and honor are invincible, as were the ancient Greek soldiers. The family unit spawning grounds of lies, betrayals, mediocrity, hypocrisy, and violence will be abolished. The family unit, which only dampens imagination and curbs free will, must be eliminated. Perfect boys will be conceived and grown in the genetic laboratory. They will be bonded together in communal setting under the control and instruction of homosexual savants. All churches who condemn us will be closed. Our only goal are handsome young men. We adhere to a cult of beauty, moral and aesthetic. All that is ugly and vulgar and banal will be annihilated. Since we are alienated from middle-class heterosexual conventions, we are free to live our lives according to the dictates of pure imagination. For us, too much is not enough. The exquisite society to emerge will be governed by an elite comprised of gay poets. One of the major requirements for a position of power in the new society of homoeroticism will be indulgence in the Greek passion. Any man contaminated with heterosexual lust will be automatically barred from a position of influence. All males who insist on remaining stupidly heterosexual will be tried in a homosexual court of justice and will become invisible men. We shall rewrite history, history filled and debased with your heterosexual lies and distortions. We shall portray the homosexuality of the greater. We shall portray the homosexuality of the great leaders and thinkers who have shaped the world. We will demonstrate that homosexuality and intelligence and imagination are inextricably linked, and that homosexuality is a requirement for true nobility, true beauty in a man. We shall be victorious because we are fueled with the ferocious bitterness of the oppressed who have been forced to play seemingly bit parts in your dumb heterosexual shows throughout the ages. We too are capable of firing guns and manning the barricades of the ultimate revolution. Tremble hitherto. Wait, tremble, hetero swine. That's what it says. Tremble, hetero swine, when we appear before you without our mask. I found that most interesting when I read it. But some say it's satire. But then again, that was first published in 1987. And look where we are today. Look where we are today. Very, very much interesting. Very much interesting. And then also another piece that I have here. I found this also interesting. It was written. It was entitled "I'm gay and I want my kids to be gay too." I found it interesting, especially because of the last part here. Let me see here. And this was written by, I have the name. I don't have the name here. The name might be at the very end. Okay. But anyway, it says here, it was written by someone named Sally Kahn. That's Sally, K-O-H-N, Sally Kahn. And it says here that Sally Kahn is an essayist and a CNN political commentator. And this Sally Ann Kahn writes, I live in the liberal bubble of Park Slope, Brooklyn, where no yuppie would ever admit to wanting their kid to be anything in particular other than happy. But more often than not, we define happiness as some variation on our own lives, or at least the lives of our expectations. If we went to college, we want our kids to go to college. If we like sports, we want our kids to like sports. If we vote Democrat, of course we want our kids to vote Democrat. I am gay, and I want my kids to be gay too. Many of my straight friends, even the most liberal, see this logic as warped. It's one thing for them to admit that they would prefer their kids to be straight, something they'll only begrudgingly confess. But wanting my daughter to be lesbian, I might as well say I want her to grow up to be lactose intolerant. Don't you want her to be happy? One friend asked. Perhaps he just meant that it's easier to be straight in a homophobic culture. But this attitude complies with, even reinforces, that culture in the first place. A less charitable interpretation is that he thinks being straight is superior. When I was a teenager, my father cautioned me against marrying a black person. I'm just trying to protect you, he said. But it was impossible to know whether he meant to insulate me from the world's bias or implicitly rationalize his own. The idea that no one would choose to be gay is widely held, even in the gay rights movement. In the early 90s, partly as a response to the destructive notion that gay people could be changed, activists pressed the idea of sexuality as a fixed, innate state. Scientists even tried to prove that there's a gay gene. These concepts about social orientation helped justify the case for legal protections. The idea that folks are born gay became not only the theme of a Lady Gaga song, but the implicit rationale for gay rights. I wouldn't even choose for myself to be gay, a friend once told me. It was a sad admission because she was. Once upon a time, of course, gay meant happy, but eventually the synonym grew apart. Gay became an unfortunate, even pitiable status when the gay liberation activist Franklin Comney launched a simple effort in 1968 to proclaim that gay is good. It was because at the time it very much wasn't. Until 1973, the American Psychiatric Association considered homosexuality a form of mental illness, and when gay positive culture had flourished since. And while gay positive culture has flourished since, our aspirations have kept pace. It's more widely acceptable to be gay in America today, but that's not the same as being desirable. In my house, though, it is. Here you might expect me to say something about how, if my daughter were gay, she would undoubtedly face challenges and hurdles she wouldn't encounter if she were straight. Maybe. And maybe if I weren't an upper-middle-class white lesbian living in a liberal city, I'd have such worries. But no matter what, I'd want my child to be herself. If I lived in, say, North Carolina with an adopted son from Morocco, I'd like to think I would encourage him to be Muslim, if that was the choice, if that's what he chose. I do this even though his life would probably be easier if he didn't. It's also easier to succeed as a dentist than an artist. But if my daughter wants to be an artist, I'll encourage her all the way and work to destroy any barriers along her path, not put them up myself. Plus, I've never for a single second regretted being gay, nor saw it as anything other than an asset and a gift. My parents were ridiculously supportive from day one, and I had a great community of friends and mentors who made me feel unconditionally accepted. By the time my daughter comes of age, she'll have even more of a support network, including two moms for crying out loud. More than that, though, being gay opened my eyes to the world around me, learning that not every gay person had it as good as I did. Helped me realize that a lot of people in general didn't have it as good as I did. I wouldn't be a politically engaged human being, let alone an activist, writer, and TV personality, if I weren't gay. If my daughter is gay, I don't worry about her having a hard life, but I do worry about people expecting her to have a hard life, helping to perpetuate discrimination that might otherwise fade more quickly. I want my daughter to know that being gay is equally desirable to being straight. The problem is not the idea that homosexuality could be a choice, but the idea that heterosexuality should be compulsory. In my house, it's plainly, evidently not. We bought every picture book featuring gay families, even the not very good ones, and we have most of the non-traditional gender role books as well, about the princesses who like to fight dragons and the boys who like to wear dresses. When my daughter plays house with her stuffed koala bear as the mom and dad, we gently remind her that they could be a dad and dad. Sometimes she changes her narrative, sometimes she doesn't. It's her choice. All I ultimately care about is that she has the choice, and whatever choice she makes is enthusiastically embraced and celebrated. Time will tell, but so far, it doesn't look like my six-year-old daughter is gay. In fact, she's boy crazy. It seems early to me, but I'm trying to be supportive. Recently, she had a crush on an older boy on her school bus. She was acting as any precocious, socially awkward child would, which was to say, not very subtle. I confided in a friend who has an older daughter. She wants to give this kid a card and presents, I emailed. The other kid is so embarrassed, it's painful to watch. What do I do? My friend wrote back with a slew of helpful advice, ending with a punch to my gut. Bet it wouldn't bother you so much if her crush was on a girl. I thought that was really a fit closing for this lady's essay on her being a lesbian, or more so of her wanting her daughter to be gay. I thought that was an apt closing question when the woman had asked, being that the woman was so, confused maybe about her daughter liking a boy when she herself is gay. And then the woman wrote back, but it wouldn't matter if she was that attracted to a girl. You see, it was interesting. I just found it interesting. But anyway, it's 15 minutes to the hour now. We're going to go into our next song. Okay, our next song is going to be, again, from Myla J, her song entitled Don't. Again, from her CoverGirl mixtape. This is Myla J, Don't. Here we go.
Don't play with her, don't be dishonest. Ay. Still not understanding this logic. Ay. I'm back and I'm better. I want you bad as ever. Don't let me just let up. I wanna give you better. Baby, it's whatever. Somebody gotta step up. And I'm somebody's on next up. Be damn if I let them catch up. It's easy to see that you're fed up. I am on a whole nother level. Girl, he only fought you over cause you let him. Fucking girl, I guess he didn't know any better. Girl, that man didn't show any effort. Do all I can just to show you you're special. Certain it's your love that holds me together. Lately you say he been killing the vibe. Gotta be sick of this guy. Pull up skirt, get in the right. Left hand is steering, the other is gripping your thigh. Light up a spliff and get high. Shawty, you deserve what you've been missing. Looking at you, I'm thinking he must be tripping. Play this song for him, I'm just listening.
You just kept on playing games, and your love wasn't the same. And I don't know what to say, but
what a shame. Another nigga had to come and save the day. Clock in, Superman, okay. The only one that got me feeling this way. And I think so far, baby, no problem. Yeah, got that good, he be doing his thing. I'ma keep it 100, man, ain't no shame. The way he put it down, he deserve everything. Oh, baby, I swear he holds it down. Yeah, he holds it now. So down.
Welcome back to India Morel Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And we just heard a song from Myla J entitled Don't from the CoverGirl mixtape. Okay, I had just read off an essay entitled I Am Gay and I Want My Kid to Be Gay Too. I found it interesting, especially that last part there about how the woman said, you know, you're talking about your daughter having a crush on this boy, and it's like you're wringing your hands not knowing what to do. But she then flipped it, yes, but if she were had a crush on a girl, another, you know, another lesbian type relationship, I guess she would know all about what to do. Interesting. At least I find it interesting, very much so. But that just goes to show, you know, a different mindset in terms of people of different sexual persuasions. I mean, it's just as different as the male mindset versus the female mindset. It's just on that level of difference. Because there's a vast difference how males think about sex naturally and how females think about sex naturally. And then again, when we bring in the homosexual perspective on sex, again, another paradigm, so to speak. But, I mean, still, the issue, it does, in fact, interest me. I mean, I'm eager to learn more. I am. I'm eager to learn more, and I even read out a name in there that she mentioned, and I plan to see what he's talking about concerning this. Yes, indeed. It's most interesting, and also it's interesting how the homosexual likes to liken their situation to other areas in life. As I said, they like to liken their mindset to other areas of life and try to compare the two, and really is like lopsided. But it's interesting that they do that. I find it most interesting. But again, I mean, those of us who are not of that particular persuasion, we have to do, I would say, intellectual battle with these people, because in that other article wherein I had read the Gay Manifesto, that person spoke about gay philosophers and gay orators, if you will, and gay arguers and gay poets and just gay everything. I mean, homosexual everything. I mean, just like heterosexual. I mean, we have to have this argument. We have to have this discussion, which we're not having right now in a real sense. But anyway, moving right along. Also, I want to also mention concerning the homosexual movement. Naturally, a lot of people seem to not realize that there is racism within the homosexual movement structure. It's like, you know, the black homosexual is, in fact, not looked upon as the Caucasian homosexual is looked upon. Or should I say the African homosexual isn't looked upon as the Caucasian homosexual is looked upon. And then again, we can very, very well bet that if the situation were that Africans were primarily homosexual, we wouldn't even be having no homosexual movement and no big to-do about homosexual rights, because it just wouldn't be like that. But anyway, no, I'm not going to go into this other article. I'm going to leave this article for now, and I want to jump forward even past the Black Caucus situation to another thing that I had mentioned was going to be a topic of discussion, which is the father's issue. I want to go there primarily because this weekend I had a situation. I found myself in a situation with an issue that did in fact pertain to the father issue. And in other words, actually, I'll just say it was with my niece. She had given me a call and wanted me to take her to get her baby, her child. Why to go get her child? Because it turned out that the father of her child, they're not married. He's just the father of the child. Some might say just a sperm donor, so to speak. But anyway, he came over to get the child for the weekend, because I guess him being the father, and, you know, she was okay with that for a moment. But in a real sense, she became okay with that after the moment when she tried to call him and to find out, you know, how the baby was. That's what mothers do, being concerned about their child. Anyway, he didn't pick up. He refused to pick up. Now, naturally, granted, he has done that before to her. I've been in their presence wherein she would call him, and he didn't pick up. And she knew that whatever that his phone wasn't turned off. He got his phone, he's just not picking up. Anyway, the baby is here now, and he came to have his weekend visitations rights with the child at his place. And my niece called him to check on the child, and he didn't pick up. Naturally, she got livid. She flipped, because that's her child. I mean, it's the first time that she was ever, it's a girl child, the first time the child was ever away from her, out of her presence, since it was born, which was only in March. So anyway, she called me and asked me if I would, you know, come and take her to get her child. And naturally, me being the great uncle in the sense of that's my niece and that's my niece's child, that's my great niece. a family. So I said, certainly, I'll do that. And we go to this guy's house, and a big argument ensued. And even on the way there, I was saying to her that I hope that, you know, nothing really happens, that you go there and we get the child and we just go on back to your house. But she was already saying that if we get there and if he doesn't want to, you know, comply to her wishes, that there's going to be a whole lot of, you know, ruckus. And I was telling her, you know, no need to get like that, you know, just call the police and things of that nature and see what happens. But then again, as I remembered, if the police would come, there's really nothing they can do because they are both the parent of the child. And being that, you know, no legal paperwork has been initiated about who has custody, who doesn't, what can the police do? So we're back at square one. I just said, well, so therefore I just hope that, you know, he's reasonable and just, you know, realizes your state of mind and, you know, give the child to you and we can just go on back home. But anyway, we get there, and like I said, that wasn't the case. It was the other case. He didn't want to give the child up. So when that happened, you know, well, eventually, long story short, eventually he gave her child and we went on back. And when that happened, I began to have different thoughts about, really, a father's right to custody of their child, especially now, one, if they're not married, and then secondly, if the parents are on the outs. In other words, you know, one doesn't really want to see the other. Either it's the man who doesn't want to see the woman anymore, or if it's the woman who don't want to see the man anymore. My thinking, based upon what happened Saturday, has changed concerning that considerably. And based upon that, I think that our laws ought to change or be changed, and then again rethink the current structure of the law concerning parental rights. Because right now, the way it goes, from what I'm hearing, whatever the courts do decide, they more so want to decide in the child's best interest. And according to the courts, the child's best interest is to have both parents in their lives. But, you know, just saying, I can understand that from one perspective, and that perspective would be that the court is thinking of the child's best interest in an ideal situation. And what might that ideal situation or circumstance be? And that is that both parents are reasonable. Okay, time is running here. So I'm going to return back to this issue next week, definitely so, and the other issues. But I wanted to bring that up first off, and we're going to come back into this issue next week concerning the father's issue, because Father's Day is also coming up. So anyway, we're going to go out with the song Friends. Interesting. Again, from Myla J and from the CoverGirl mixtape. So this is Urban Society signing off, and we'll see us next week with some more issues, and the first issue is going to be the father's issue. And we're going to get into the Congressional Black Caucus as well as the essay on niggers and the Becky word. So with that said, Urban Society signing off, and we're going to hear the song Friends going out from Myla J. So here we go, and good night.
Playing it cool, you were playing. I know I wasn't the only one you messed with, but it was good, I was on to the next one. I remember when you started checking up, boy, you must have learned your lesson. Trying to tell me how I always was a blessing. Stayed in the LAS, but you guessed it. Oh, yeah, I got you. Too bad I'm vibing, nigga, I'll be fine without you. Guess you found out all the mother was about shit, and now you're gonna waste your time chasing me, nigga, please. Ain't no need to waste your time being caught up over me, nigga, please. I don't wanna hear about it, you can tell your friends about it.
Go tell
about it.
Go tell
about it.
Go tell. was with me living life so tough. Even all your friends that I was cool with, they all know that you be on that bullshit. Even though they didn't think that I was stupid, you did. But I ain't tripping, just don't push it. It's cool, I'ma focus on my vision. Cause you only get one pass and you use it. You use it, amusement. So funny how you used to strive, how to lose it. Now you look so stupid. And it's so amusing. Your effort is so useless. And now you're gonna waste your time chasing me. Nigga, please. Ain't no need to waste your time being caught up over me. Fucking bitches, now you wishing you were with me living life.